and welcome to the first opening bell of 2015. My name's Matt Christie and I am joined by John Dennan. Of course, Tris Dixon, for those that don't know, has gone off to Pastures New, or rather he's gone to open his own gym. He has left Boxing News, but he hasn't left boxing as a whole. So John, for the most part, I suspect it's going to be you and I doing these podcasts. How do you feel about that?
Are you ready for this, Matt?
Always ready. Always ready. You always have to be ready at Boxing News, don't you?
Ready for anything.
Okay, we haven't got long. Meeting room is only booked for half an hour and then we're likely to get kicked out by one of the insurance titles, so we better get a bit of a wriggle on.
I reckon we could take him, Matt.
We could probably take him, but we don't need to do that, do we?
We don't need to.
No, exactly. Anyway, right, let's go. So, Christmas was relatively quiet, wasn't it? Apart from a more exciting than anticipated Guillermo Rigondo fight. Did you see that fight?
No.
Were you surprised that Rigondo hit the deck twice?
Yes. No, because the fight actually, it wasn't televised in the UK and wasn't even televised in the US, which is kind of rough on poor old Rigondo. But then his previous fight, I think, was only on a Spanish language channel in the US, which sort of sums up his problem with getting seen.
Particularly when he's involved in a relatively exciting tussle as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah. So
we can see it.
I would have liked to have seen it. I would have loved it if it had been on TV over here, because I certainly didn't expect him to, you know, maybe not struggle, but he got dropped twice before he went on to finish it inside himself. And I just kind of wondered, does that hint at a bit of vulnerability about Rigondo? It's not the first time he's been put down as a pro.
Is it vulnerability or is it kind of the aging process? Because he's what, 33, 34 now?
Yes.
I know he's...
Even before Nonito, there was a fight that he was winning, he did get rocked.
Yeah.
We know he's a defensive master, but, you know, maybe he's defensive for a reason.
It's a very interesting, it's an interesting school of thought. But Rigondo, I think, is one that boxing fans, certainly hardcore boxing fans, would like to see in some kind of defining fight this year.
Particularly
if he is in the final throes of his career. And let's face it, guys down there in those weight classes, they don't go on and on and on and on and on. This year, it would be nice to see him in with someone like Frampton, someone like Quigg, someone like Santa Cruz. You just can't see it though, can you?
No. Sadly, just doesn't seem like there are any concrete moves towards making those fights. But yeah, I'd love to see, you know, Rigondo fight Santa Cruz, Scott Quigg fight Carl Frampton, and then the two winners fight each other.
Yeah.
It's not impossible.
It's a dream scenario, but I mean, as much as we say that we want to see Rigondo against Quigg or Rigondo against Frampton, number one for the people behind Frampton and Quigg, it is a massively risky fight. And ultimately, you know, although hardcore fans want to see it, I suspect that Rigondo still wouldn't sell, you know, as many as some other challenges might over here, which is a shame, really. Yeah.
And it's because it's not just the risk, it's the fact that, like you say, he struggles to sell, like that he needs a major broadcaster behind him.
Yeah.
And then if he doesn't have that, why would the other major fighters in his division want to fight him if it's going to be, a lower key event than what they'd like to be doing?
One fight that most certainly would sell out, of course, is the perennially discussed, and he's just been a constant letdown for many, many years, is Manny Pacquiao against Floyd Mayweather. Now, in the first issue, the second issue of 2015, we have named 10 fights that we would really, really like to see. We won't go into, I won't mention them all here. Hopefully you will go out and buy the magazine or download it. But not surprisingly, top of the list is Mayweather against Pacquiao. There has been, we're told, talks over the festive period. However, as we sit here now, it ultimately to me anyway, it doesn't seem like it's any closer than it ever was.
Hasn't been ruled out yet, though.
Hasn't been ruled out yet, no. John, do you think... So are you optimistic? You know, can I get from that you're optimistic? I was, I must admit, perhaps rather foolishly and naively, a month or so ago. However, that optimism has subsided somewhat. So are you still...
I'm naively optimistic. Deep down, I don't believe it's going to happen. But, yeah. You know, I'd like it to, so I'm willing for it to happen.
Eric,
it would be awesome.
Yeah, do you know what? It would. I still suspect the fight wouldn't be fight of the decade. I don't think we'd see something like Thomas Hearns against Sugar Ray Leonard, for example. But however, I think the interest it would draw to the sport, and I don't think. And having said that, I don't think the fight would be dreadful. I don't think it would be a damp squib. I think Pacquiao could have his moments, and I think that Mayweather ultimately would produce a boxing masterclass and probably win without any controversy on the cards.
I reckon they both declined, but sort of, you know, in step with each other. So I still reckon it'd be a really good fight.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think it has the ingredients to be say one of the greatest fights of all time. But as an occasion, I think it would be phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. But
it'd
Eric Armitt,
like Thriller in Manila. They both declined at the same time.
Wouldn't be like the Thriller in Manila.
Floyd Mayweather can't afford to use to lose.
But anyway, as I've been saying now, Eric Armitt for people who are not aware of Eric Armitt, he's been in and around the game for many, many years. He used to submit articles to Boxing News many, many years ago. But what he does for us on a weekly basis on the website is he goes through pretty much every significant fight that's taken place, not just in this country, but all over the world. And there is a little kind of breakdown of what happened there. It's a fascinating read if you've got a few hours, because on average they're about 10 to 12,000 words long. He does that on a weekly basis.
What?
He's not a young man either. But what he does do fortnightly for us is his Snips and Snipes column, where, you know, he looks at the boxing world through educated eyes, and, you know, some of it can be quite cynical. Some of it can be very funny. But what it generally is throughout is very enlightening and is well worth a read. And he starts off his Snips and Snipes, which came in today and is on the website now, kind of talking about this fight, saying that he still holds out hope for it. But he doesn't believe that any amount of money is going to persuade Floyd Mayweather to take the fight. Ultimately, the only person that can persuade Floyd Mayweather to take that fight is Floyd Mayweather himself, and that will be with a sense of loyalty to his legacy, in that hopefully he will realise that if he doesn't fight Manny Pacquiao, and I know this has been said time and time again, that if he doesn't fight Manny Pacquiao, he really will affect his place in history. Do you think that that's true? Do you think that if he doesn't fight Manny Pacquiao, his long-term nemesis, the guy that has been in the same weight class as him for best part of 6 years now, and he doesn't prove that he's the best in his weight class, let alone the best in the sport, he will be affecting, you know, where he wants to be in terms of greatness and that sort of thing?
It will affect his legacy to an extent, but I think people do tend to forget about the fights that don't happen, you know, because by nature, history is going to record the events that actually did take place. So I don't think it's going to tarnish his legacy that badly. So I think he probably could get away with, if he stays unbeaten, he could get away with never fighting Pacquiao, because then he will, you know, or at least in his own estimation, go down as a great unbeaten fighter. I think that's the key for him. But he, you know, he's never lost.
I do think there's a lot of truth in what you're saying, that we do forget about things quite quickly. But to me as well, it's not as if this fight has been discussed for 6 months. It's been six, seven years maybe now. Even longer than that people have kind of been mentioning it as a possibility. That is a long, old time in history for it to be forgotten. But I, You know, I think if Mayweather does go down in history as an unbeaten fighter, I think time will be kind to him, but certainly not in the next 10 years or so.
Yeah.
But that's very often the case, as we see with the likes of, I don't know, top of my head, people like Lennox Lewis, Larry Holmes. When they do walk away, then maybe not initially as appreciated as they should be, but that certainly does come with time.
Then if he does fight Pacquiao and wins, then he's sorted. TBE.
Well, this is the thing that has puzzled me for such a long time. Okay, let's leave out kind of, you know, all the troublesome clash with promoters, the different television broadcasters that have got heavy links with each fighter. Ultimately, you do think that if Floyd Mayweather wanted this fight, and I'm not purely blaming him, because in the past you could perhaps lay the blame at Manny Pacquiao's feet, but right now, if it doesn't happen this time, you would think that Mayweather would be the one to blame on this occasion. But the fact that so many people would and this is the other thing, people say this would be the most anticipated fight of our lifetime. It would be one of the most anticipated fights in history. I can't think of one person that would pick Manny Pacquiao. Nobody within the industry or a journalist or a trainer or a fighter who would pick Manny Pacquiao over Floyd Mayweather. Looking at their styles, you would think, and looking at fighters that of Manny Pacquiao's style or similar, that come forward, wild, frenzied nature, you would pick Floyd Mayweather to beat them. And this is why it's surprising to me that Floyd Mayweather still hasn't signed on the dotted line to fight Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You okay. Know, like, you know, I think fighting Manny Pacquiao at the moment would be more preferable than fighting Amir Khan, because I think Khan's got to go a long way to outbox Amir Khan, and he fights at such a high pace for 12 rounds, whereas, you know, Pacquiao would probably be an easier style for Mayweather to box and make a lot more money.
Yeah, very
but
true.
He'll probably fight Cotto, so.
Okay, yeah. Let's move on. Let's not quite move on. Oh, but incidentally, I think we may have looked at the odds before, and kind of backing up what we've just said there, the odds for Mayweather, he would be 3-1 on to beat Pacquiao. Pacquiao would be a 11-4 shot with that pesky draw at 22-1. But let's just pick out one fight out.
It would be a controversial draw, wouldn't it?
They generally are. let's pick one, because what we've done, we've split it into 5 international fights. We've split it, and there's also 5 domestic showdowns that we'd like to see. The one that intrigues me there, and we'll just mention one of them, and that is Karl Froch against James DeGale. Now, you spent some time up in Sheffield this week, and you were with Robert McCracken, Froch's trusted trainer and friend. And, you know, just there's something on the website, isn't it, that you spoke about. But what did you get from that, from the meeting with McCracken regarding DeGale's chances of snaring a shot at IBF super middleweight champion Karl Froch?
You know, probably not good news for James DeGale. They seem, by the sound of it, they seem like they're focusing on whether this fight with Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. can be made in Las Vegas. And that's the fight that Froch is, you know, as his team says, motivated by and interested in, and that's what he wants to do, to go out to Las Vegas. So my sense was, you know, fighting DeGale, you know, that fighting a young British mandatory challenger, I think from Froch's point of view, it sounds like he feels like he's just done that twice, he wants to do something else now. So I think their eyes are looking to America.
Nobody could accuse Karl Froch of ducking anyone throughout his career. Everything he's achieved, for me, he's right up there with the best British fighters of all time. But do you think that perhaps he might be ducking James De Gale on this occasion?
Not ducking, but I think he just, you know, I don't know, I think he just doesn't want to. Froch seems like someone who just wants to do what he wants to do, and no one's gonna sort of force his hand or tell him what to do, because I mean, he has fought absolutely everyone. So I think it's more a case of, if you're gonna put, you know, he's at a late stage in his career. He's only got, you know, according to his trainer, he's only got one or two fights left. So I guess he's gonna want those fights to be something that really, you know, get the juices flowing, get his fighting spirit up. And if De Gale, and if the thought of a James De Gale fight leaves you a bit flat, and then you've got to put yourself through a 12-week training camp for that, it's a lot to ask. So I suppose Froch just sort of earned the right to take a fight that he wants to.
I'd go along with that, and it's not, you know, we were just speaking a few moments ago about Mayweather-Pacquiao, in that certainly initially at least it would hurt Floyd Mayweather's reputation if he was to retire without fighting Manny Pacquiao. It wouldn't really hurt Cole Froch's, would it, if he went through his career without facing James De Gale?
Yeah, so I think, yeah, and if he's someone who's motivated by his legacy and how he's going to be remembered, well, obviously he's going to be remembered for that huge event at Wembley Stadium, but then he can look at other great British fighters like, you know, Ricky Hatton and Lennox Lewis and Joe Calzaghe, and you see they've all gone over to fight in Las Vegas. So you can understand why he wants to do that. And if he's only got one or two fights to play with, he's probably got to, you know, he's kind of got to prioritise that. You know, I'd like to see Carl Froch James De Gale. I think James De Gale's looked great in his last couple of fights. I like a big British fight like that, but it's a big British fight. It would have to take place in the UK. You couldn't take it out to Las Vegas.
The only thing that I kind of not so keen or not so fond of with the whole Froch Chavez Jr. Contest is the Chavez Jr. part of it, to be honest with you. He's done very little at super middleweight to earn a shot at the world title.
He's been at super middleweight just fighting people who were actually made the weight.
But officially I think he's had two fights there, hasn't looked particularly impressive in either, and people that are kind of saying James De Gale has done nothing to earn a shot at Cole Froch, I think Cole Froch has said similar things himself, are almost shooting themselves in the foot, because Chavez Jr. has done substantially less to earn the shot. But do you, I mean, you know, I say all that, Chavez Jr., when he's at his best, he has looked impressive in the past at middleweight. Do you give him a shot against Cole Froch?
By virtue of it being in Las Vegas, you know, the scores could fall his way.
Yeah.
I do think he's tough. I don't think he's going to be a walkover. I think he's going to be, you know, a physically tough, demanding opponent who could probably take, who seems like he can take a lot of punishment as well. But I don't think he's nowhere near as tricky as someone like James De Gale, you know, who's a clever boxer, young, fast, and has been hitting hard in his recent fights as well. So De Gale has every right to that, you know, number one contender position that he's earned. The thing that Chavez brings is, you know, that Mexican fan base and the sort of the whole event. And the worrying thing about Chavez though is, you know, will he make the weight? He's ill-disciplined. Who knows what he gets up to? He's the opposite of Froch. He's a consummate professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think that it will compare to, I mean, I don't think we're going to see another fighter who can attract the masses over, over to Las Vegas, certainly a British fighter like Ricky Hatton could in our lifetime. But do you think that Froch, do you think that Froch Chavez Jr. could at least be compared to those fights in terms of the support that he'll get out there?
So certainly in that kind of direction. I mean, not at that kind of level, but then Ricky Hatton was something else. Yeah, and also he was he fought the biggest names in the sport as well. But who wouldn't want, you know, with Carl Froch, you know you're going to get action, you know it's going to be a tear up. And who wouldn't want to go to Vegas for that if you can afford it?
Yeah, the thing that
I'd be up for it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'll throw my name in the hat as well. I mean, it reminds you know, because people talk about the Ricky Ham fights, but generally they just refer to, you know, when they think of, when you think back to the kind of the masses of people over there, the first fights that come to mind are the kind of marquee names in Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. You know, he's fought other guys over. I think Jose Luis Castillo was over there. Is there a chance that maybe this Froch against Chavez Jr. could be a Jose Castillo type fight where Froch goes out there, looks very good, gets a bit of a taste for Las Vegas, and there'll be a bigger fight to come for him? Perhaps, I don't know, a shot at the light heavyweight title or something like that? Or do you think that this would be Carl Froch's final stand, a fight against Hule? What's your instincts telling you after you spoke to McCracken the other day?
So McCracken said he wouldn't have more than two fights, but he was saying he's already in the gym, hitting the pads, actually looking quite sharp. And Froch is such a competitor, isn't he? He's had quite a long break now since his last fight. So I've got a feeling he might get two more fights in. And that, yeah, I don't know who the biggest fight would be at, because there must be a bigger fight than Chavez Jr. to be had in Las Vegas, but I don't know who it would be. So if I was a betting man, I'd have a hunch that he might get a second one in. And this one could be a good sort of British event, or a good event for Brits, if, as a Matchroom plan to, they get other British fighters on the same show. So that could sort of bring the Brits out in force, depending on who they put on there.
One more Carl Froch related question I will aim at you. He has also said repeatedly that if he doesn't get the fight in Las Vegas, that he's quite happy to retire. We've also just spoke about, you know, his warrior mentality. He clearly does love the game, and he, you know, for everything that he says, he also, I suspect, loves being known as the best, loves being world champion. How easy would he find it just to walk away? Because let's face it, however well negotiations might be going with Chavez Jr., it's not out of the question for this fight to completely fall to pieces, is it? So do you believe Carl Froch when he says that, yep, if this fight doesn't happen, or if my Las Vegas fight doesn't happen, I'm off?
I'm sure he'll fight again this year, but again, this fight, just like you say, could fall through, and in that case, he wouldn't fight till the summer, you know, or even, you know, and even later. Yeah, but he could fight later on towards the end of the year. So I think they will find someone to fight. As, you know, as McCracken said, there's always someone to fight. It's just a case of who it's going to be. So it could be that Golovkin has a few, big name wins, and suddenly maybe Froch Golovkin late in 2015 is a huge pay-per-view event.
So
that would be good.
No, I think a lot of neutral observers, I've seen a lot of American websites, American publications, the top of their wish list of fights, you very often see Froch Golovkin, which would be a fantastic spectacle, wouldn't it?
Yeah, those guys don't mess about.
So either way, we will see. John Dennon says Carl Froch will fight again.
for what that's worth.
Okay, before we came in to this room to do the podcast, I was listening to a conference call with Chris Eubank Jr., who has managed to secure a world title fight of sorts, but the fact that, you know, this says more about the WBA than it does about the world. He's fighting Dmitry Shudinov for the interim middleweight title. Eubank Jr. coming off a close, albeit deserved, I thought, loss to Billy Joe Saunders. But Eubank Jr. gets his shot at the gold before Billy Joe. Frank Warren incidentally said on that conference call that he believes Billy Joe and Andy Lee will fight in March at some time, and they suspect all that to be tied up over the next few weeks. What do you make of this chance for Eubank Jr.? Is it a masterstroke in matchmaking? Does it stink to high heaven? You tell me.
Well, it's an interim, a WBA interim title, yeah. When WBA already have a regular...
They already have a regular, a world...
Super. Yeah, so, you know, the title...
It's a portion of a world title. Certainly not one that I take any notice of. And incidentally, you know, at Boxing News, we certainly do not recognise interim titles as world titles, nor do we recognise the WBA regular, nor things like the WBC silver. But however, it will certainly be marketed as a world title fight. You can almost be sure of that. So what do you make of it? Because it was certainly a surprise to me when I heard the news that Eubank Jr. would be getting this as his comeback fight.
Yeah, I mean, Eubank Chudinov is a pretty solid fight in itself to have as a comeback fight. And if you just don't take it too seriously as a world title, then it's a pretty good fight. Obviously, you can be outraged saying he doesn't deserve a shot at a world title, but then it is just this
interim nonsense, diluted.
Belt. Yeah. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. I'd just enjoy it, you know, chill.
Do you, you have, Chudinov has fought twice on these shores. He drew with Patrick Mendy in 2013. Later on that year, I believe, he comfortably outscored Max Maxwell over 8 rounds. I believe you were at the Patrick Mendy fight.
I was. Took me a long time to get home.
What was the headline?
Really bad buses around Wembley.
What was the headline event?
Derek Chisora or Malik Scott.
Oh, okay.
Bradley Saunders looked very good on that card.
Well, that was the
some other people fought.
The
Billy Joe Saunders.
Ooh.
Threw a lot of punches.
Yeah. Well, they do, don't they? The Malik Scott,
ideally.
The Malik Scott Chisora fight was a controversial one. Was the shooting off Patrick Mendy controversial in that? Because he was just asked the question, you know, are you concerned about coming over to Britain again, given that you were held to a draw against Patrick Mendy? Admittedly, I didn't see that fight, that Mendy shooting off fight, so I don't know if it was a fair draw. I don't know if Shudinov deserved to win, or even if Mendy deserved to win. And you know, looking at your face, you haven't got a clue.
No, well, I'm just trying to remember in my brain. So much has happened since then, Matt. But in my brain, I can't remember for sure how I scored it. But I was certainly unimpressed with Shudinov.
Okay.
So I think he should count himself content with that draw. Like he certainly didn't do well. But I can't remember how exactly I scored it at the time, but I remember not thinking much of Chudinov. So he might have improved since, or he might have had an off night then, but I'd certainly be putting your money on Eubank Jr.
Thank you. So Eubank Jr., there will be a fairly detailed report of what he has just said going up on the website before I leave for the weekend. Yeah, what I took out of it is that he is still an exceptionally, exceptionally confident young man. Confidence bordering on delusion, perhaps.
But he did do better than expected.
He absolutely did do better than expected, but you know, we mustn't forget that he was saying beforehand that it would be easy, that he would stop Billy Joe, that it would be simple. In that one, he admitted that the 12 rounds was... You know, it was a good experience for him. He's refusing to accept that he lost, though. He's not, in his mind, counting that as a loss. He also said that, you know, he will continue to be his own man. He didn't feel like the scenes in his corner at any point were chaotic, and that things will continue, and that the team, you know, his father and Ronnie Davis and himself has grown stronger as a result. Do you think that deep down Chris Eubank Jr. may have had a look in the mirror and asked himself some questions since that Billy Joe Saunders fight?
I mean, it doesn't sound like it, does it? I think he should. but I don't think he has done. I suppose doing so well in the last half of the fight makes it easier to come away with thinking, you know, convincing yourself that you were robbed or that you should have won it, and then just then gloss over the, you know, the sort of the weird setup in the corner and the problems of that. But I don't think he's probably never likely to, you know, make his father take a step back from the team. They seem to be a double act, which is entertaining, but may not be that great for his boxing in the long
term. Yeah, do you think, as I was about to say, I think it's certainly, it could be a detriment to his progression in that, I mean, with Eubank Jr., it was almost a bit of a gimmick when he turned professional. I know we spoke at length about this prior and probably just after the Billy Joe Saunders fight, but it was almost a bit of a gimmick when he turned professional. I think what he did prove against Billy Joe, as you said earlier, is that he certainly belongs in the top tier at domestic level, at the very least.
Yeah.
And he's a very impressive fighting specimen. Some of the things he does are exceptionally good. He also does things that are amateurish. They certainly need work. And, you know, how would he fare if he did completely distance himself from Eubank Senior, and even maybe from Ronnie Davis, and he was just to go and knuckle down with a coach that would perhaps, you know, tell him exactly what to do, tell him to listen, and that he could. I think ultimately, Eubank Jr. doesn't seem to have a great deal of respect. I'm not saying he's a rude person, I'm not saying that, I'm not saying he's a nasty person or anything like that. But he doesn't seem to have a great deal of respect for the people around him. And I think in order to succeed pretty much in anything in life, you need respect for the people that are the closest to you. He doesn't have that. Do you think that's true? And do you think he would benefit from moving on to a different coach?
Yeah, I think he would, or at least sort of distancing himself from all that, and to, you know, and to change what he's doing, he probably would. I'm sure that would help him, but he has seemed to have picked up quite a lot along the way. As in, he seems a lot better a few fights into his professional career than he was when he started. So he's certainly got the capacity to learn and improve. And maybe that's just sort of learning by doing. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think it is what it is. And also, this whole crazy show helps him get these big fights. It's going to keep him in the mix for a rematch with Billy Joe, maybe even a fight with, you know, once he's got this interim title, you know, fight with maybe Andy Lee if he beats Billy Joe.
Frank Warren mentioned that if Billy Joe Saunders dethrones Andy Lee, and Eubank Jr. is victorious against Shudinov, that an open air show would be in the offing, topped by Eubank Jr. and a Billy Joe Saunders rematch. Do you think the rematch is that big? Do you think it could attract that level of interest?
I think it might. It's depending on how these fights go. I'm not sure if the loss to Billy Joe has sort of, you know, I'm not sure how badly that's damaged Eubank Jr.'s career. I think people are aware of him now and would still be interested in him. So I think that would, I think the rematch would be very big. But
yeah. No, I agree with you. I think too much is for too often now. I mean, you look back, you know, you go back to, you know, the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s even. 70s, where fighters would lose a fight, they'd learn from it, they'd come back, they'd lose another one, they'd learn from it, and they might have had 9 or 10 losses, sometimes more, before they would progress to world level. But with each loss, they've learned something. I just fear that even though there were lessons on offer there for Eubank Jr., he doesn't seem willing to take them. From what happened against Billy Joe Saunders,
yeah.
The way he's dismissing it. No, I won that fight. And we often see that bravado immediately afterwards, but it's almost as if he hasn't allowed the whole thing to sink in. He's been dismissing the fact that we had Eubank Jr. and Ronnie Davis kind of barking orders at him or barking things at him. he's saying, no, that's no problem, ultimately I'm still going to be my own man. You do sense that perhaps he may never learn.
Yes, but he did seem to learn during the fight itself.
Fair comment,
he went along, he kind of figured out how to use his sort of physical advantages, and he did sort of grow into the fight. So maybe, you know, once he's alone in the ring and once outside the ropes, he can sort of get on with things and start figuring it out more. So I think he probably would be better in a rematch second time around with the experience he's just acquired by having the first fight.
True, but you don't always get 24 rounds to kind of figure someone out, do you?
No.
You know, he may come up against somebody who won't grant him a rematch if he was to lose and this, that. I'm not disputing that, certainly. I remember when I was watching it at home, for me last year, it was probably the fight I was most excited about, was Eubank Jr. against Billy Joe Saunders. And after about four or five rounds, I thought Eubank Jr. was perhaps embarrassing himself. He's too strong. You know, it's a bit too strong. But he looked like he was out of his depth.
Yeah.
And then he started to turn it round. And I still have the utmost respect for what he went on to achieve in that contest. But just hearing him now speaking about that fight, I just wonder how much he's actually taken from it. I suspect deep down he may have taken more from it than he's letting on.
Yeah, but he may not be able to, you know, actually fulfil his actual potential with that current team. You know, I think
I agree.
One thing, he's reached a high level very quickly, but getting beyond that, he might need a little bit something else. He might need to actually listen to his coach.
Do you think he can be world champion? And obviously, as we said earlier, we won't be calling him a world champion if he beats Shudinov. Do you think he can go on to be a world champion, win one of the four major belts?
Not at present.
Even though
I do think he can be better, I think to get to actually, you know, win a major title, I don't see it happening at present without a drastic change. But, you know, he can become interim champion, regular champion.
He can, yeah. Yeah, he can do that indeed. Okay, I think that's pretty much it. We will be back. Actually, let's just briefly, we'll obviously talk more about this fight next week, but let's just quickly talk, very, very quickly and briefly talk about Bermain Stiverne against Deontay Wilder for the WBC Heavyweight Championship. 8 days away from that fight as we speak. Are you excited?
Yeah. Obviously, yeah. No, it's good.
Brilliant. That was
Would you like me to say some more?
That was quick and brief. No, we'll
no it is. It is a fight worth getting excited about. It's Deontay Wilder, I reckon, you know, he's still a mystery. We know he can punch. We know he's a bit crazy in the ring.
And outside it.
Yeah. But I just, you know, I don't know if he's capable of just knocking Stiverne out or if he's going to get obliterated himself. It's going to be an exciting fight. And it's great that it's for a major heavyweight title. And it is good to see a sort of serious American in the mix until Shannon Briggs gets back to the top.
Don't talk about Shannon Briggs. Actually, we will talk about Shannon Briggs. We spoke to Bernd Bonte in the week, just for an article on the website, just to kind of get some clarification as to what was happening with Vladimir Klitschko's fight, I think April 28. We did make a call to Bernd Bonte several months ago, and we were told that Shannon Briggs absolutely was not under consideration despite him saying otherwise. However, he was far from ruled out
with
our latest conversation, Shannon Briggs. You can see why in Brooklyn it might be an easy fix to the problem they've got at the moment of not having an opponent. I think the crucial thing would be, if it was Shannon Briggs, is that the next fight is huge, which feasibly it could be, because it could be the Stiverne Wilder winner. What would your reaction be to to Briggs Klitschko.
Oh, no, it's terrible. It's terrible. And it's just, it's dangerous as well. Shannon Briggs doesn't stand a chance. It's just ludicrous. And I don't approve of people who type in capital letters all the time, which he does on Twitter and Facebook. He's on like being shouted at.
He's on Twitter and Facebook far, far too much. Wearing not nearly enough. And
the whole thing is just ludicrous.
I mean people that are familiar with the magazine and what have you will know that, you know, that I've spent time with Shannon Briggs, and as a human being he's very entertaining, he's very warm and everything else. But ultimately, and it comes back to this, and I've said it so many times, when I first interviewed him, and at that point he was shouting and ranting and raving about a fight with Vitali Klitschko, which hadn't been signed, and he actually did get told off in Wales for ranting and raving about it so much because it hadn't yet been signed.
Who told him off?
Someone from the WBC, WBC event. And but then pretty much what he said to me after we'd sat down and we'd spoke to each other for maybe an hour and a half, is that I may not win the fight, but I can sure as hell sell one. And to me, that is perhaps the most revealing thing that he said during that 90 minutes. And you've also, I have to say, you've got to admire that if he gets this fight, this, which is likely to be close to £1 million, he's going to end up with in his pocket. You've got to admire him for securing that. And it's his persistence. And he's done it.
It's not dignified, Matt.
It's certainly not dignified. I completely agree with you. The whole thing I'm finding very, very distasteful now in terms of, in regard to boxing's reputation, in that people can do that. And he keeps calling, you know, he compares himself to Clubber Lang, and the way that Clubber Lang was kind of harassing Rocky Balboa. The difference, of course, is that Clubber Lang deserved his shot.
Yes.
Clubber Lang beat up every contender that he could, whereas
like,
Briggs hasn't.
And like Clubber Lang, Briggs is a fictitious character.
But the thing is, Shannon Briggs has got, I think he's ranked number 6 with the WBA. So what? Who is to blame here? You know, and
all of us, Matt.
Well, we are.
Twitter and social media.
It's a crazy world
YouTube.
We live in. It is a crazy, crazy world we live in.
Oh, it's probably going to happen, isn't it? Because Klitschko, he's fought everyone who's good, but he's also sprinkled in some real mismatches between them. Like Alex Leopai, he fought Mormek, didn't he?
Yeah. Mormek was probably the worst of the bunch.
Yeah, Leopai wasn't great.
Yeah. Hassim Rahman was a horrible fight to watch as well.
How about Anthony Joshua to fight Shannon Briggs? Would you watch that?
Yeah, I think that's a fair matchup at this point. But I think even if that fight was made, you'd get a lot of people saying that, you know, Joshua would hammer him, and that it's too one-sided. It's certainly a more legitimate matchup than Briggs Klitschko, that's for sure. Okay, should we call it? We've been talking for longer than I thought we'd be able to, actually, and worryingly, that has gone back. So
we've got actually gone back in time.
Yeah, the time is actually clicking backwards. Hopefully, it has recorded all of that.
We have to start again.
I hope not. Anyway. We will be back next week, where we will talk more in depth about Bermain Stiverne, Deontay Wilder, amongst hopefully other things. Thanks ever so much for listening and for your continued support.